You're listening to KX93.5 FM.
FM. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's time for the Friendship Show.
Friendship Show.
With your hosts, Dawn Price, Mark Miller, and Scott Hayes. The Friendship Show.
Friendship Show.
Friendship Show.
Okay. April there on the engineering board. April Johnson. You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes, and of course, this is the Friendship Show. In the studio, always, or almost always, are my co-hosts, Dawn Price and Mark Miller. Good morning.
Present. Morning.
Present.
Present, present. We got an interesting show ahead of us, yes?
I'm excited about this show.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a good story to tell.
Yeah, this is going to be a great one. Yeah. Our guests, by the way, this morning, we'll just kind of put it out there right now. Our guests this morning are Rick Scott, Director of Programs at Friendship Shelter. Round of applause,
Woo!
Round of applause.
Woo!
And also Mia Ferreira. Do I have that correct?
Yes, you
Yay!
Do.
Okay. And she is the ASL Program Manager, if I have that correct, yeah?
New ASL Program Manager.
The new
awesome.
One. Great. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a, let's not even roll into a music. Let's sort of get this conversation rolling, if that's
sure.
okay. And because I think we've got a lot of territory to cover, mm-hmm. and we want to get it out there as best way that we can here. So, Dawn, I'm going to start with you, you know, as sort of your position over at the Friendship Shelter. What exactly is the alternative sleeping locations in Laguna Canyon? Why is it there, and what's its purpose?
Well, its purpose, the short answer to that is it's
okay.
an emergency shelter. It's
right.
a place for homeless people to come in safely for the night and have a safe place to sleep, a hot meal, a place to take a shower and do their laundry, store their belongings if they're a local, and we'll talk more about what that means in a while, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Generally, stay off the street for a night, and then it's a night-by-night program. It's different from our program on Coast Highway in that respect. Our self-sufficiency program on Coast Highway, people will enroll in the program, and then that's where they live while they're in the program.
Right.
At the ASL, in any emergency shelter, really, it's a night-by-night situation.
How long has the program been out there?
We opened the program on November 12th, 2009, after a pretty difficult period in homeless services in Laguna Beach that previous summer. And that's really how the ASL came to be.
When you say the difficulties, what do you mean exactly?
Well,
what was going on that was requiring the need for this sort of service?
Laguna Beach has unique challenges with working with homeless population because of some very good things. It is a compassionate community. It wants to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. Our community embraces people at all ends of the economic spectrum and wants to be welcoming and inclusive. But we're also a tourist community, and we rely on tourist income.
Mm-hmm.
We rely on, our businesses rely on a couple of months in the summer to make a large part of their annual revenue. And so we balance this presence of people who are chronically homeless and sleeping outside with our need to keep our beaches and parks presentable for
yeah.
tourists. And so in December of 2008, our city was sued by the ACLU because it had an anti-camping ordinance. And the anti-camping ordinance basically said that people couldn't sleep outside.
Right.
And the ACLU's position, and the city really never contested this because the constitutional argument here is fairly sound, that sleeping is a biological imperative. We all need to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Since we all need to sleep, you can't say, Scott, you can't sleep.
Right.
You can't help sleeping.
Right.
I can say, Scott, you can't sleep in the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
But if I say, if the radio station's owned by the city,
mm-hmm.
and I say you can't sleep in the radio station, I need to tell you where you can sleep.
Right.
And this, I believe, was at a time when anti-camping ordinances in general
were being tested.
Were being
yes.
challenged in communities all over the country.
Right. Right, and we had, and so we were a test case, I think, for the ACLU in a lot of ways. And so this this lawsuit came. It was not, our community really kind of recoiled at the thought that it, of all communities, and
yeah.
I agree with this, would have been seen as as anti-homeless or tough on homelessness. And so I think that created a lot of angst. And I was very new at the time, so Mark may actually have more insight into that than I do in terms of how the community responds.
Well, Mark, let me ask you. I mean, I remember that period, and I remember that the
You live right down by Heisler Park.
Exactly. The homeless community really sort of elevated substantially during like a 2 or 3 month period.
Right. What happened was the city had to immediately cease and desist while they sorted this out. And so the word got out that anybody can sleep in Laguna Beach. And it became a bit of a party that summer.
Yeah, okay. And so this sort of precipitated the need for the ASL at that point. Is that sort of how that transition worked, Mark?
I think the premise of that argument was, if you're going to say, if you want to enforce your anti-camping ordinance in any community and say you can't sleep in this public park, you have to provide an alternative. You have to say you can't sleep here, but you can sleep here. And I think given what was going on, it was not the summer of 2008?
Summer of 2009, where Heisler Park and other nearby areas really became a little bit overrun.
Yeah, I think given what was going on during that summer, the city had to do something. I mean, they absolutely understood that because the park didn't belong to the public anymore. I mean, people had set up residence in Heisler Park for the summer. And so they began talking about where can be an alternative place for people to sleep if they need to.
And I think what became really difficult that summer was that everyone sleeping outside got lumped in the same category of homeless. And I think what really happened, the people who migrated to Laguna Beach that summer weren't chronically homeless people. They were in large part
looking for camping grounds.
People who were out partying and drugging, and they ended up mixed in with our regular homeless population, and it became very unsafe.
What were the numbers back then in terms of Laguna's homeless? Do you have any sort of figures back then, Mark? Do you remember?
Well, I think, people have always talked about this number of somewhere between like 45 and 55 of sort of like local homeless individuals who have been in Laguna Beach for a long time. And I think that number has always sort of been within that range. Mm-hmm. I think in the summer of 2009, I heard reports that there were as many as 100 people who were camping in Heisler Park.
Gotcha. So as soon as this facility was found in Laguna Canyon.
Well, yeah, actually, just to back up slightly, I think I want to give our community and particularly our city credit because all they needed to do was say, here's a gravel parking lot. If you want to sleep, you can sleep there. That's all the law was going to require them to do. And homeless providers like us and concerned citizens came to public meetings that summer and said there's more to be done, and the city immediately responded. They wanted a safe solution. They wanted a solution that was compassionate. And we came up with the idea of temporary construction trailers, like a temporary classroom is how I thought of it.
Yeah.
My son had been in a temporary classroom once. And so we initially set up these temporary trailers in the Act 5 parking lot, actually, in November of 2009, November 12, 2009. Mm-hmm. And the city agreed to experiment with this new model of an emergency shelter out there.
And I think while in all of these sorts of cases, there's always some discussion about whose responsibility is this, and frankly, who should bear the burden, i.e. who's going to pay. Mm-hmm. And I think in any community where these sorts of things have been successful, it's always a partnership between public and private. Mm-hmm. And I think the city and the community worked really hard, and sometimes it was difficult, but worked really hard to come up with a public-private partnership where everyone would share, everyone would be involved, and everyone would sort of get what they needed out of the situation.
Right. So we ended up with Friendship Shelter as the operator.
Okay.
And we provide, and to this day, provide the day-to-day staffing and management of the program. The city pays us for that, and the city pays for the trailer. So in large part, the city is almost the sole funder. There's a little bit of county money that comes now. And then the community stepped up to provide volunteer support, particularly and significantly in terms of meals. And so from November 12th, 2009 to today, we haven't had a single night out at the ASL where we didn't have a group of volunteers come in with an evening, a hot evening meal.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that works is that we different groups, mostly churches, have one night a week. And so Neighborhood Congregational Church is the one that comes to mind for me because that's a relatively small church community. They have Monday nights, and in that small church community, they find the resources to bring meal for 60 or more people every single Monday.
You say sometimes feeding as many as 70 people a night. And so, I mean, if you can do the math on that quickly in your head, 70 people, $3 a head is a pretty cheap meal, seven nights a week.
Right.
It's a substantial contribution.
It's a huge contribution. So we've been really fortunate. That's been the community's support of the program.
By the way, if you're listening and you have a question for Don or Mark or our next guests, or if you just have a comment about this, you can call 949-715-5936. 715-5936. Mark, one of the questions that I often hear from people regarding the ASL, the alternative sleeping locations in Laguna Canyon, is does offering these sorts of services encourage people to come to Laguna Beach and be homeless?
I think that was always one of the big topics and one of the big concerns is if you have this location, hundreds of people will come from all over Orange County to sleep here. And I think one of the very smart things that we did at the very beginning of this program was start tracking systematically the use of the ASL and would it become a magnet? Because if it is a magnet, and that's what they call it, the magnet theory, we need to know that. And Dawn is actually the one who is sort of the keeper of those numbers. And I believe her research says no.
Yeah. There really has not been that impact. In fact, in 2010, 428 different people used the shelter over the course of the year. And last year it was 326. So it's actually gone down.
These are 326 separate people,
most of whom stay one or two nights.
Right. Okay.
So most of our guests at any emergency shelter, if the whole system is operating well, an emergency shelter is a couple of nights for someone who needs to be redirected into another program that's going to help them move back into housing as quickly as possible. What's happened to us is we have a small group that's kind of stuck there.
Right. But I think that's really important, I think, for people to understand, is that over the last 4 years?
Almost four, yeah.
Fewer people are using the ASL today than were using it 4 years ago. The numbers have gone down, not up.
Numbers have gone down.
But therefore what? That's sort of some sort of statement on the services are providing more permanent housing for these residents? Or why would the numbers diminish, do you think?
I think the numbers initially spiked because of a very, very weak magnet that, you know, there's something new in Laguna Beach. And we may have seen a few people check it out. And, you know, we're extremely proud of this program.
Yeah.
It's a compassionate, sensible solution, but it's not fancy.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone's going to come into town to check it out thinking they're going to get ongoing lodging in Laguna Beach for free, I think very quickly they're going to see that this is probably not a good life plan.
Yeah.
And so we may have had some people check it out. The other thing that may have spiked our numbers in 2010 was that we experimented that summer with letting people sleep outside in the courtyard. And so there were some nights where we had actually a larger capacity.
Mm.
Night to night, we have a capacity of 45 people inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular summer, we let an additional 15 sleep outside for a few months. So that spiked our numbers as well.
I would say that part of it might be that in the process, I believe it's something like 80, maybe even 90 people now who were using that service did get channeled into other programs. And so like 80 or 90 of those people actually came into a friendship shelter program and then moved out from there.
Right.
And some other people then were placed in other programs and sort of moved along the continuum of care to say, we're not going to keep you here. We're going to get you someplace that's going to actually serve you for what you need.
Yeah, and that's really been largely the work of Rick, who's one of our guests today, I want to talk to in a minute, assessing people who are able to go through a rigorous program like our self-sufficiency program, who are currently able to stay sober, currently able to look for work, currently able to eventually make their own way in the world financially. And we've done a really good job, I think, of identifying those people and moving them through other programs.
Mm-hmm.
The folks who are left are not likely to work and make their own way without significant support.
Mark, the environment out there, the capacity of 45 residents out there every night, is that typically filled most nights? Does this mean there are 45 chronic homeless in the city of Laguna Beach? And I mean, most people don't go out there and visit or look. And so can you kind of describe for them what that is like out there?
I think you have to understand that, first of all, anyone who wants to have dinner out there can. At the end of the night, 45 people get to stay. But some nights, there's 60, 70 people who are there between, I think dinner is like at 6:30, 6:45. And so from 5 until maybe 7:30, 8 o'clock, there can be as many as 60 or 70 people out there. You really have to give credit, again, to Rick Scott and now to Mia, who has really sort of raised the bar of the services at the ASL. But you have to give credit to the staff out there. Oftentimes, which is only two or three people, trying to manage, you know, a crowd of 70, many of whom have some significant mental health issues going on. And so it's you kind of have to be on your toes a little bit, and you kind of have to be able to go with the flow a little bit, because there are, you know, there are people out there who may be involved in, you know, some sort of incident that's going on with them. You know, there are sick people out there, and there are oftentimes two or three people who are in charge of providing care to very sick people.
At the same time, it's a community. So it might not be as chaotic as someone who's never been out there would imagine. They take care of each other, I think, as well. You know, we don't require sobriety in that program because that program is about safety. So someone may be quite impaired. We have lifelong alcoholics that come into that program. And on a given night, one of them might be really having a rough day. Often their buddies are helping them safely get to their mat, safely lay down and stay safe. And so our staff are critical. I also want to give credit to the community, which kind of helps itself as well. But we should talk to the experts about this. We should get our
guests. Let me ask. I would like for listeners to get a visual, Mark. I would like to the listeners to kind of get a sense of what the environment looks like, when the residents come into the environment, how they lay down their mats and find their place and line up. Can you kind of just briefly give us sort of a visual in terms of what it's like out there?
Sure. It's very simple. The facility opens up at 5 o'clock. And so at 5 o'clock, there's a line of people that line up outside the door to be able to get in at 5 o'clock. Once you walk into the building, it is just a big open trailer. It's one big room with a few bathrooms off to one side and a kitchen off on the end. And people come in, and there might be some fresh fruit or some bread or something that's on a table, and people will come in and start to get settled in for the night. And so there's a stack of mats that are in one corner, and everyone will go get a mat, and then everyone finds a place on the floor where they can put their mat. And the mats are, I would say, if people are lucky, the mats are maybe 2 feet apart from each other, and that's where people are for the evening. And then, you know, a group of volunteers will come in and everyone will line up and there'll be dinner served at 6:30. Sometimes there might be a movie that's shown around 9 o'clock, and that really is sort of the beginning of quiet time, where it's like we're all going to get ready to lay down and go to sleep together, and so let's start by playing a movie. Oftentimes there might be some calming music that's going on in the background, and it's really about trying to get everyone in sync so that there can be some sort of structure in the program.
And women are one side, women, men are the other side.
Women are one side, men are the other. Mm-hmm. Over the course of the evening, people can sign up for a slot to take a shower or to do their laundry. We have a group of people that the city has deemed as having ties to the local community, and people who are local are able to store their belongings in a duffel bag in a separate container outside. So there's that option as well. And then now we're bringing, as we're going to talk about in a moment, a lot of services that are available to them at that same time.
Yeah. April, let's do this. Let's take a very short musical break. Can we go to track one, These Days by Jackson Brown? And this is KX93.5. You're listening to The Friendship Show. We're talking about the alternative sleeping location out in the canyon. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk with Rick Scott and Mia Ferreira. And We'll be right back. And that's, of course, These Days by Jackson Browne, which I think is a great song. And that song was picked out by April, by the way, so good choice, April.
Thank you.
Hey, this is KX93.5, Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. This is The Friendship Show. I'm here with my co-host Don Price and Mark Miller. We're talking about the alternative sleeping location out in the canyon. And with us this morning is Mia Ferreira, and she is the ASL program manager. Do I have that right, Mia?
Yes, you do.
Uh-huh. And Mia, you have a master's degree in public health. And I'm wondering, how long have you been out there, and what was your first impression of the facilities out there?
Thank you. I'm really new to the program. I've been here about 2 months now, actually on the 9th, 2 months. And I have a long history of working in homeless services for about almost 20 years. So when I first went out there, it felt very familiar to me, sort of a standard for emergency shelters. But what really struck me was what Don was mentioning earlier, so that sense of community that is built out there, and also the fact that it's a bit different in that the locals are given preference. So there is a real sense of, we're part of the community here and we're going to take care of each other. I think I was also impressed with the fact that the volunteers that come in and provide the meals, that's just a smooth flow every night. We can expect that. And in other places, I've never seen, it's always been a challenge to make sure that meals get served every day.
So. Yeah. When you say a sense of community, do you mean a sense of community out there at the ASL? Do you mean a sense of community in terms of the partnership with the city? What do you mean by sense of community that you felt out there that's different from some of the other facilities you've worked at?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I bring to the table is, you know, with a public health background, really looking at systems and how communities address the needs of all of their residents. Mm-hmm. And so I see both ends. I see the community that's formed in the way that people take care of each other out there and the way that people volunteer. A lot of the guests volunteer with services, the cleaning of the bathrooms, sweeping and mopping. So there's a real sense of community, like we're taking care of this space, which is ours. And then again, the outside community and how the city is paying to make sure that people have a safe place to sleep.
And do you feel as though this is different from some of the other facilities that you've seen, visited, worked at before?
Yeah, I think the fact that it is a city program is much different. Most mm-hmm. of the other programs I saw were sort of more on the church end or the nonprofit end. So mm-hmm. It's exciting to be part of a collaboration with like the nonprofit, which is the Friendship Shelter out there doing this actually for the city. Mm-hmm. So I do see that as a different, and also the Project Ready that we're going to be talking a little bit about, the fact that we have these resources to provide services to folks who need more intensive attention and hopefully finding ways to take next steps in their
lives. That's wonderful. We're going to talk about that project in a moment. I'm wondering what the benefit of a program like ASL, what the benefit is to the community in general.
Yeah, I think from a broader public health perspective, again, looking at, you know, there's all different ways we can look at it from a cost effectiveness. I mean, I think looking at housing people, reducing, especially because Laguna Beach is a visitor center, mm-hmm. Reducing the amount of people who are sleeping in public spaces, I think it reduces, you know, from a hygiene perspective, people are not sleeping there. From, you know, using facilities or not using facilities there, we're reducing that amount of the burden on the community, and you know, I think we're also able to we're providing that safety net, you know, that in terms of public health, you know, we're not just looking at those who can care for themselves. A public health perspective makes sure that everybody is taken care of. So,
Don, let me ask you, if the ASL didn't exist, what would happen to the residents who currently use that program? Where would they go?
Rick might be a good person to answer that. I think most of them would go back to the street.
Let me introduce Rick Scott one more time, Director of Programs at Friendship Shelter. Sorry, Rick, you actually get a chance to speak on this show. And make sure you get close to the microphone. I didn't get a chance to hear you. So what would happen to those residents if not for the ASL?
I think there's two separate groups that we're talking about. One is the local group that we've been discussing, the 45 chronically homeless individuals that are from Laguna Beach. They would be in the street. That's where they were before the ASL. I think that's where they would continue to be. In terms of the other group that kind of passes through, I still think they would be coming through Laguna Beach, but probably spending a few nights at the beach or in front of local businesses and those kind of things.
Don't you think, though, Rick, specifically in Laguna Beach, because of the geography and the makeup of the town, don't you think one of the things that the ASL has done is out in the canyon? Because if the ASL didn't exist, I don't know that people would be able to go down and sleep on, you know, ocean or beach. You know, I don't think the city would allow that. Mm-hmm. Where they would go is the canyon. And so I think what lots of people would start doing, because that's what they were doing before, is they would start putting up campsites in the canyon. And from that public health perspective, it would be incredibly dangerous.
Right. Well, it's safety with crossing the street. It's safety with fires. There's lots of reasons that we didn't want them out in the canyon.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about, I want to go back to an earlier conversation about the environment out there. And I've got to believe that 45 people... Yeah, I don't care who the 45 people are, but 45 people in one room, there's going to be conflict. There's going to be conflict between the residents out there. There's going to be conflict between the residents and the staff. What's that environment like, Mia? What's the conflict like? How do those sorts of issues get resolved when you're dealing with, as Mark had said earlier, people who have some mental health issues?
Yeah, I think that, you know, you're correct that conflict does occur, but I think that there is a real sense of, you know, we have to be respectful to each other or we lose this privilege. I think that's part of the conversation that goes on with the guests. So if someone starts to get disrespectful, you'll often see people saying, "Hey, buddy, calm down, you know, just chill out for a little while." I think the staff are really good at being compassionate and sort of redirecting people, you know, mm-hmm. giving them a chance to vent outside so that they can actually, you know, deal with the conflict. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, one of the things that I'm, you know, when you deal with severe and persistent mental illness, that there are some times when you need to call in some extra help. Mm-hmm. And I think we have the help of Jason Ferris, who's a police officer who comes out there.
Okay.
And he's a community police officer who has been specially trained. And he really comes from a place of really supporting what we're doing, not really wanting to arrest people, but trying to diffuse situations. So he's been a great resource for the ASL. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding that if it comes to that, calling him is a really great alternative.
Yeah. Rick, how many... Okay, go, please.
I just wanted to add to that that I taught junior high school for 13 years, and I just have to say there's probably less fights
than in junior high school.
And a junior high school. Just so I know.
That's a. I'm using that the next time I do a presentation. That's but
Rick, is it edgy out there a little bit? Is it a little edgy out there at all?
Well, it can definitely get edgy. But okay. Again, as Mia was saying, you know, the staff is. We have a lot of experienced staff now. That most of our staff have been out there for since its opening for 4 years and. Again, a lot of help from the community and Jason Ferris, et cetera.
How many staff members out there on an average night? 1, 2, 5, 10?
There's 2 at all times.
Wow. And 45 residents?
And 45 residents, although between 5 and 7:30, there could be up to 70.
Yeah. Don, did you want to say something?
I was just back to the safety issue saying,
yeah, please.
You know, I think that we've learned a lot in the time that we've done this program. I can remember long conversations about safety, contemplations of metal detectors, and talking to other programs about saying,
wow.
You know, how do you keep things safe? We were very concerned, and it hasn't been our experience. And we would call these other programs, and they'd say, you know, don't worry about that. You know, do you have enough toilet paper?
Yeah.
I think that's true, because there were conversations about you need to wand people coming right. in, and there needs to be armed security at all times, and we haven't. It's never been an issue. I think it really, from sort of, you know, an outside perspective, I think part of it is just sort of becoming familiar with the population and understanding that this is sort of the reality that they live in. And for them, it oftentimes makes sense. And you sort of have to be able to put yourself in their shoes and say, in this reality, in this environment, this isn't unusual.
Right. And so if the conflict is over, my mat always goes there. That may seem really silly to us, but that's the only real estate that person can claim. And
yeah.
So that becomes incredibly important to that individual. And sometimes honoring that, and Mia's got more professional ability on that than I do, but sometimes honoring those things and just taking a step back and going, okay, well, we're going to live in this person's reality.
One of the things I noticed when we went out there for that project is that when there is a little tension, when there is some sort of conflict, most people in a community don't want to get involved. But what I noticed was people step up immediately. There's not one person. There's 2, 3, 4 people trying to calm down that one individual who's having a bad day. Mia, is that sort of typically how it works out there when there's conflict?
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned before, I think that there is a real strong sense of we need to take care of each other. We need to keep this safe space for everybody.
Yeah.
So there is a...
Have you ever felt vulnerable on your job, Mia? Have you ever felt as a staff member at these various facilities? And we don't have to speak specifically about the ASL, but...
You know, actually, I have never. I've always felt very comfortable. I think one of the things, and Don mentioned too, is, you know, having a real sense of meeting people where they're at and respecting. You know, I think the thing that I bring in many years of building programs, building relationships with people that are about dignity and mutual respect. I'm not someone who's coming in and giving. I'm who are you?
Yeah.
And I think that having a respectful relationship creates safety. I've never felt unsafe. The ASL is a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people already, I've only been there 2 months, but I feel like a lot of the guests already are like, oh, she's part of the family. And so I've never felt unsafe because I feel like there are ways in which if you treat someone with dignity, you get it in return.
For somebody who may want to volunteer their services, what sort of personality traits does it take to deal with out there in the ASL?
flexibility is key. I think that's really key. Knowing, you know, that you may expect to come in and do one thing, but the need may be something else. And I am going to put a plug in because I would love more community volunteers. We have a clothing room that didn't get mentioned, but one of our, you know, needs for many of our guests are clothing, and we do have donations of clothing, but we need help in terms of sorting the clothing, hanging the clothing, keeping our clothing room and our supply rooms clean. And so volunteers would need to be flexible and compassionate.
If anybody's listening and you want to call in, if you have a comment, a question, anything along those lines, call 949-715-5936. Don, did you want to say something, by the way?
I was just going to say if people want to volunteer that are Excellent. Listening, they can call Friendship Shelter at 949-494-6928. Kristen Points is our point person on that, and we'll take the information and get it to Mia. So, and there's also a link on our website, friendshipshelter.org, where you can fill out or explore volunteer opportunities.
Excellent, yeah. Rick, I want to come back from a very short musical break, and I want to talk about this Project Ready. I'm anxious to hear what this is all about. You've been listening to KX93.5, Laguna's Only FM. This is the Friendship Show. We're going to take you out for just a very short musical break with Look What You've Done by Bread. And that, of course, was Bread, a 70s group, as I recall. Don, you were talking about this music being really relevant to your life, yes?
Yeah, we're not talking about it. My mother's listening.
All right, fair enough. You've been listening to KX93.5, Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. This is the Friendship Show. We're chatting this morning about the alternative sleeping location in Laguna Canyon. And our guests this morning are Rick Scott, Director of Programs at Friendship Shelter, and Mia Ferreira, ASL program manager. And Rick, we kind of left the show before the musical break talking or asking the question, what is Project Ready? What does it mean for the homeless community? What does it mean for the citizens of Laguna Beach? And I've got to believe you've got a lot of information to share with us, yes?
Sure.
Sure.
Project Ready really was is a HUD grant, Housing and Urban Development, a relatively small grant that was given to us in 2008. And it was given to us to provide supportive services to our transitional housing facility in San Clemente. And basically what the grant was given to us for is to provide those support services and basically to help our residents increase their income and provide permanent housing. And so there was all different ways that we tried to do that. Basically, one, we were able to professionalize our staff down at Henderson House, which was, again, the transitional living facility at the time. And so provide professional case management, have therapy involved, and help people go back to school, education. About half of our clients going to Saddleback or certificated programs. So kind of the goal was to help these individuals that graduated from our self-sufficiency program that would move down to the transition. We had kind of a year to work with them. And so I guess the perfect kind of goal would be someone who'd come to us with a minimum wage job. We'd be able to help them get into school. They would maybe a certificated program like a medical assistant, and this has happened to several of our clients. So they would go to school for 1 year while they're with us, and then they'd be able to, when they graduated from that class or from that certificated program, they'd be able to, so they came to us with making minimum wage and would leave making, you know, $15 to $18 an hour.
Something, because if you don't, Rick won't get to this if you don't ask him directly. So the goal in Project Ready, when you were running that program at Henderson House, or transitional living facility, was more income, sustained sobriety, and then moving into permanent housing. Mm-hmm. And what was your success rate in that program?
By the end, the last couple of years, I think we were above 90%.
Wow.
Meaning so everyone would leave with income, with a place to go, and with sobriety.
That's great.
I think at this point now we're really excited because we are moving to, that program is changing to permanent supportive housing, which goes with the 10-year plan and homelessness. And so we're really, really excited about that. And I know that's a future conversation on the show, hopefully. But because we're changing that program now, we're able to transfer this HUD grant, Project Ready, to the ASL.
So let me back up a little bit here. This HUD grant that came to your avail in 2008 is still available. The funds are still there.
Yes.
Well, yeah, and HUD changed what it was willing to fund.
Okay.
And wants to focus on chronically homeless people. So it was a good timing for us to take a look at the intent of that program, which was income and stable housing. And really, HUD challenged us to think about how might those goals be met with a much more disabled population.
Wow.
And so we took a leap of faith and transferred the funds over to the ASL.
I think the big change in sort of the global picture of homelessness and internally in our organization with homelessness, I think the big change is instead of managing people's homelessness, we're over it. We're going to end people's homelessness. The solution here is to get people income and get them into a home and spending less time trying to make them comfortable with their homelessness.
Rick, this seems like a far more challenging project than Henderson House, because Henderson House, as I recall, or you can correct me if I'm wrong, these were residents that left Friendship Shelter to go to the Henderson House for another year or so to kind of, you know, get a job, get income, have some sort of sustainable housing. But when you're dealing with the chronic homeless community, much more challenging project, yes?
Yes, and I think, as Dawn said earlier, we've taken about 100 people out of the ASL through Friendship Shelter and many of those into Henderson House and into apartments. And as you said, what we have left now is this group of more of the chronically homeless. And so I think what we're excited about with the grant transferring to the ASL is bringing someone like Mia on board that's going to be able to work with those people that have been there since the beginning, that have been there for 4 or 5 years, you know, 4 years at the ASL, and really work with them to really gain their trust, connect them to mental health services, and by doing that, in turn, they'll be able to find that permanent housing. And so Mia is there to help them fill out. First, Project Ready will be able to do a lot of things. Basically, the essentials of, you know, purchasing IDs, which help people get, you know, jobs and birth certificates and all those kind of things, helping people get medical insurance and filing for Medi-Cal and all those, as well as, you know, someone there to help with just kind of connecting services with, you know, the social service agencies to help with, you know, filing disability benefits and all those kind of things. So bringing that money over there is going to be a huge help.
And you know, Scott, just in terms of statistics, when Rick talks about this group that's kind of still there after we've kind of pulled everyone who's easily placed into other programs and moved along, our research shows us, our statistics for use of the ASL shows us that a small group, 12%, about 40 people last year, used 70% of the resources out there, 70% of the bed nights. If you think of every night we have 45 people, that's 45 bed nights. That's jargon in our industry, but that's 45 bed nights times 7 times 52 is how many bed nights we have in a year. 70% of those bed nights were used by 12% of our people, 40 people. They are there almost every night. They are stuck there. Many of them have been there almost every night since we opened in 2009.
Are you suggesting then that these 40 individuals are the first group of individuals you're going to work with in Project Ready?
Well, this is Mia's challenge.
Mia?
Is really getting to know, you know, we have managed their homelessness for 4 years, as Mark said, and we need to really get much more serious and strategic about solutions. And the great thing that's happening as we're bringing someone like Mia onto the team is that our whole county service menu is changing, and the feds that are funding it and the county, which has a 10-year plan to end homelessness, is all looking at how to get people out of homelessness permanently. And so as that is coming, as more supportive housing is available and things, in order to access those services, people are going to have to be connected as much as we can connect them to mental health services, to income, and Mia is going to be able to help us get that done.
Mia, I'm curious. That's, again, we're back to that challenging project, and this is a community that we mentioned earlier has certain addictions or mental health issues. That would be, I would suspect, one of the first challenges to deal with. But as the, you know, the program manager who's coming into the system, what's sort of the first round of steps that you're going to get this program launched and ready?
Well, first, it's for me, what I'm beginning to do, not only as a program manager, but more in the Project Ready role, is developing relationships. As we mentioned before, these are 40 individuals, or plus or minus a few, who have been there. And so this is the first time that we've had a dedicated person who can spend the time developing the relationships. Some of that means getting somebody to take a shower, you know, and me just spending time with that woman who's been sleeping outside, or it sometimes comes in, mostly comes in, but hasn't showered since I've been there. And now she knows my name. And so it's developing relationships, going back to that dignity I was talking about earlier. Right. So we have that dedicated time, which is in my time, in order to do that.
How do you know, of the 40 individuals who are using 70% of the resources out there, how do you know which ones you're going to be more successful with, or who are the first round of 5 or 10 people that you're going to work with? Is that just a personal sort of thing, or is it whoever steps up?
Well, I mean, I think I've started to build some relationships. So it's those ones that I'm kind of forming at first.
Gotcha.
You know, I'm working with a gentleman, I'll call him Larry, who's a bit young, and he's been staying there most of the time. He might be considered chronically homeless, but he has been working on and off part time.
Okay.
And so just starting to work with him and develop a relationship and asking him who he is, you know, spending that actual time, bringing him into the office and just getting to know his story.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So those connections I've been able to make. So,
Rick, what is the benefit of this program, Project Ready, to the citizens of Laguna Beach? Why is this more beneficial to Laguna Beach than, say, not having the program?
Well, I think it's a huge benefit, and I think the major benefit is having someone like Mia being able to work with those 45 individuals and get them ready to move into permanent housing. And in order to do that, we need to get them their benefit, you know, file for their benefit. These are, again, we're talking about individuals that have been chronically homeless and individuals with severe mental disabilities. And so they're never going to be able to make it on their own. They're not going to get a job. And so we need to get you need to get a lot of information first, a good foundation about, you know, what Orange County Mental Health is saying, 6 months of sobriety in an individual plus, you know, working with them for 6 months in order to file this disability for it to really come through.
I think that
is starting that process.
I think that is really key. And I know that that's something that Rick has really gotten mired in, and that what it takes, frankly, to get someone classified as disabled, even if it's obvious to you that that person is disabled is there is a lot of bureaucracy involved in getting people that designation. True?
Absolutely. I think there's a bit common misconception that if you see that person who's talking to themselves on the street, well, obviously they would qualify for a benefit. And that doesn't necessarily mean that. I mean, I think we're learning, and we've over the years in working with these bureaucracies, that it takes much more dedicated time and evidence, as they would say, to document that this person actually needs a benefit.
And I think what exacerbates that problem is that sometimes the very sickest people we see will not or cannot participate in their own diagnosis and their own early stages of receiving assistance. And so we very often with the most disabled folks we have out there, not only don't have someone who has any insight into their own mental health situation, but we'll often fight against it. Their mental health is leading them to not trust the system that's trying to help them.
Additional resources, additional staffing. How's that working for Friendship Shelter, Don?
Well, we're on our way with our supportive housing program that we started this year. We talked a little bit about last week, and maybe can talk about in a future segment. This week, we housed our first two individuals in permanent supportive housing, and they are both. They were both at the ASL the first couple of days. So Mark and Rick were more involved in that than I was.
You have the support of the community? Does the community of Laguna Beach, Mark, seem kind of behind this program from what you can tell?
I think, I mean, this folds into the ASL. And the community has been very supportive of the work that we do at the ASL. I think really this just sort of marks a new direction and a new level of professionalism and effectiveness of the program. And I think Rick is absolutely right. The big benefit of this bringing Project Ready to the ASL is to bring someone with the experience, the knowledge, the education of Mia Ferreira, who, I mean, I don't want to put too much pressure on her, but I think she's going to change the course of that program in a very short time.
Yeah. Can Mia or Rick or even Don or Mark, can you share with us a success story? Well, from one of the programs here, maybe, I mean, Project Ready, it hasn't really launched yet, correct?
It's
in the process,
months.
2 months into it because
just
of Mia's?
Now,
okay, yeah, great. Any success story, any anecdotes you can share with us, Mia?
Well, I think currently we're talking about this permanent supportive housing, and I am working with someone who is who's been a long-term resident at the ASL, and you know, again, building a relationship with him. We've worked on getting him medical care. He's dealing with his addiction issues, and he's on his way to permanent housing, and that's just been in a short 2 months that I've been working with him. So yeah, there's a lot of movement going on already there.
Yeah, beautiful. I think we have a caller on the line, if I'm not mistaken. Let's get the caller on the line. This is the Friendship Show. We've got about 1 minute. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Hi, what's your first name?
My name's Barbara.
Barbara, thank you for calling in, by the way. Did you have a question for somebody here in the studio today?
I do have a question. You know, I'm trying to get a handle on what the permanent housing is. Like, what do people who live there get? Are they in a big room, or do they have individual units, or what does it look like in each unit?
That's a great question, Barbara. Thank you for calling. Don?
Thanks.
Well, maybe our real estate expert, Mark, should tell us what the physical plant looks like.
It could look like a lot of different things. When we're out looking for permanent housing for people, what we're looking for specifically are two bedroom, two baths, a living room, a kitchen. And what we're really looking at is we're trying to find what's the best space that two people can share and can have some privacy and be in different parts of the house. And we're really just looking for something that's conducive to a nice roommate situation.
Right. So right now, the program we have only allows us to rent really two bedroom apartments. So we're working with a group of individuals who are high functioning enough to navigate a roommate situation.
Yeah.
Down the line, we hope to establish some sort of permanent supportive housing that is single room occupancy or efficiency apartments, because the people that Mia and Rick have been talking about in this hour probably need their own space, their own apartment. But all of these, the reason it's called permanent supportive housing is A, it's their home forever, and B, we have supportive services wrapped around them in their homes so that they can stay there successfully.
You know, Friendship Shelter has been around 25 years. It's one of the most respected homeless shelter programs probably in the country. I've got to believe that if anybody is successful at these sorts of programs, it's going to be Friendship Shelter. Kudos to everybody in the room today, by the way.
You've got a good team here.
You got a great team.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for coming in. You've been listening to, of course, The Friendship Show. I'm Scott Hayes on behalf of Don Price, Mark Miller. Our guests this morning, of course, Rick Scott and Mia Ferreira. We're going to lead out with some music, April, if you're ready to take us out. And number five, I don't have it in front. Stand By Me with John Lennon. KX93.5 FM.
Been listening to The Friendship Show on KX93.5 FM. Join us every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. for great conversation, great music, and the chance to make great new friends. The Friendship Show on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM.